Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Non-League Keeper, the podcast dedicated to the goalkeepers of non-league football. And today we are joined by the Chase Town number one, Curtis Pond. Curtis, how are you and how you found the last few weeks? Because if I'm right in thinking, Chase Town's last game would have been last year now, back in November, end of October, early November.
Yeah, it was around then. Like I say, it's great to be on the show and everything. But I think our last game was actually against Newcastle Town. We was at home on a night game and we beat them 3-0. And, you know, what a way to go out. But little did we know that that was going to be our last game up until what are we in now? Like March. So it's getting on and it's getting to you now. You just want to get on that pitch and see the fans and play with the other players that you used to playing with and just having the crack with the lads, really.
Yeah, it's end of April now, and normally the business end of the season is really kicking in. We might, in normal times, this would have been the weekend just gone, would probably have been the last weekend of the season this season because it started late. We were going until May, so it must be frustrating that you're not playing, you know, being involved in massive games that could decide the fate of not just football clubs but players' futures, whether they're going to get promoted and go up or whether they're going to slip down through the dreaded relegation trapdoor and having to rebuild careers and clubs' histories.
Yeah, that's it, mate. And I think one of the main things is people don't realise that it's an extra year of people's careers that they don't want to get rid of. You know, you spend more years not playing football than you do actually playing football. So you want to play as much as you can. And, you know, having another year chalked off when, I'm 25 now, you're possibly in your prime. It's annoying, but it is just one of them. And hopefully we can start playing back properly as soon as possible.
Hopefully soon back possible. We're not too far off now from July pre-season starting and what have you. So hopefully we can get the season underway 14th of August, I think it is, for the Northern Premier League. And hopefully, touch wood, with everything going on with the vaccine and what have you, we won't be getting the season cut short again.
Oh, I hope so. I'll tell you. It's happened twice now, isn't it? And obviously, I think the first season that happens, the first time it happened, we weren't really in doing the best of ways anyway. But just before the season cut off, we started picking up games. So when we had Swanee come in, the new gaffer, we did start to pick up points and, you know, get on a good run of games. So it was a shame to cut that short. And like I say, it was a shame to, I think now with our new gaffer, he's technically only been involved for about four games, apart from the ones that have been null and void. So we just want to get a good season under our belts and see where we can actually go.
I work in the Northern Premier League myself. I work at Kisgrove and cover a bit of Leek Town as well, and it's just been so frustrating these last 2 years, really. There's no consistency really to the football, and then when you look at what's happening in the National League as well, that must be frustrating as well, because they're continuing to play and you guys have stopped, whereas you're only three leagues off being a National League club.
Yeah, it's annoying. It's, you know, you hear a lot of these players that have, you know, took that step up and done the loan move up to a couple of leagues above, and you know, our striker Joey, he's gone up to Hereford, and he in fact scored the winner in the semi final to take him to Wembley. And fair play to him, do you know what I mean? He's gone up that step, and he seemed to have performed there. So I think we might be on the lookout for a new striker come the new season, and just see how it goes. But that's the way of the world.
Must be pleasing though to see one of your teammates doing well, and he's going to have a chance to walk out on the Wembley's hallowed turf, even if it's not for your current club.
Yeah, it's amazing. I'm actually really jealous as a kind of way, but you know, we're hoping that. Well, I think fans are allowed back by the time that final's on, and we're hoping we can all get tickets for it and go and support him as a club, and just hoping that he can do the best he can possibly do and everything, really.
Yeah, it's great to hear that yourself and your teammates hopefully going to be heading down to Wembley to cheer him on, and hopefully, I know they've got Hornchurch, so I think Hereford would probably be the favourites on paper, but maybe both teams, it's great to see them in the final. And it's actually not, I think it's the first time since like the 90s that we haven't had a team from the conference itself, the National League, now in the final.
Oh, Wow. Yeah, it is a rare one. It's just a shame that we couldn't get, because we got actually kicked out of that competition due to a COVID outbreak in the camp. I think we went to, in fact, I wasn't even meant to be in the squad that game. We all went up to Spalding, and then as we travelled back, it turned out one of the lads tested positive for COVID, and because we'd have been on a 2.5 hour trip, we all had to isolate for 10 days. And, you know, it was a sign of the times where it was absolute rife back then, and every man and his dog were supposedly catching it, but none of the lads caught it seriously or anything like that. Or I don't think anyone actually tested positive, but it was a shame. And to get out of the cup that way, I mean, you never know how far you're going to go, and normally clubs kind of thrive on these kind of cup competitions, really, don't they? So
how tough was it for you then, having to isolate for 10 days because of something that you love doing, playing football? It forced you to isolate.
Yeah, it was annoying. You know, one of the main things is a lot of the lads with work, a lot of the lads are self-employed. And at the time, I had just changed jobs. So I was sent home from work straight away, and I'm in a job now where if you don't turn up to work, you're not getting paid. So luckily, I believe I had some holidays to get put through, but some of the lads might not be so fortunate, and they lost out on a bit of money and the things. But you know, as long as we're all okay, that was the main thing really. But if I'm honest, I just played my Xbox all day every day, so it wasn't the end of the world.
No, and as you say, everyone was all right, which is the main thing. Let's go right back to the start of your career, Curtis. You started off at Chasetown in the youth setup, and you've been at Chasetown all your career. So what was it like going through the youth team down at the Scholar Ground?
Yeah, so I first remember I was about 16, and I went on a trial at West Brom, and nothing ever came of it. I didn't make the cut. And I remember thinking to myself that was it for football. I didn't actually realise that non-league football was really a thing at that age. But then I heard about the Chasetown Scholarship. You know, it's a thing where you could, you know, potentially learn a diploma and whatnot whilst getting the chance to play football and potentially break you through that way. So I started that, and I had a great time with some of the lads, you know, playing football every day for 5 days a week. You was almost like it was professional, just obviously at a lot lower standard than your ones in the Premier League and everything. But I believe it wasn't until my second year when I actually got asked to come through to the first team. I got asked to go down, and if I'm honest, I was scared. I was scared that I was going to make mistakes or not be good enough compared to all these men, you know, these adult footballers when I was just such a young lad. So I actually put off going down for a good while. And then something just clicked in the head, and I decided to go one day. And it just grew from there, really, and just built the confidence upon that and just grew my way in. Started making the odd appearance on the bench, just getting the odd game. And then eventually, I think it was 17 or 18 when I got my initial number one spot. I can't remember when it was exactly. But, you know, it's in a sense, the non-league, I've gone through the ranks and earned my spot that way. So it's different from what you hear from all these players that have been up and kind of come down to this level and stuff who are quite established. I've had to make a name for myself and go from there.
You touched on about leaving the diploma, and I think if I'm right in thinking, AFC Telford United have something similar, or used to anyway. And I know Chorley up in Lancashire, they have something similar with their player pathway. Do you think it's important that clubs have this sort of like scholarship that players can do? They can build their way up. They could potentially be like a Jamie Vardy or someone you could sell on, or if not, they've learned skills that they could take into a job, or whether it be like coaching or in the media.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's massively important to have, you know, like your homegrown talent. Currently in the squad at Chasetown at the moment, I believe two of us, I was actually on the scholarship, another player, Rolly Haywood. We were together on the scholarship at that age, and then we kind of met together at Chasetown now. But I think it's massively key, because not only are the lads they're seeing potential talent come through the ranks that they could use. It's also potential talent that grow. It's like you say, like Jamie Vardy, you know, started off at Stocksbridge and got his way to where he is now. And there's been plenty of non-league stories, which I'm sure that's happened before and everything.
One of the big parts of Chase Town's history in the last 2 decades or so is the FA Cup. And I know we were just chatting before we started recording about the games, and you weren't actually at the games against Cardiff and Oldham and Port Vale, what have you. But how ingrained is that in the club's history to now, you know, when you go to games, particularly in the FA Cup? Is it something that you're always reminded of by the committee people, the people like Paul Mullen, who I believe was there at the time and is still press officer for the club now?
Yeah, you hear about it a lot. When I was coming through the college setup and playing with some of the first team members, some of them were actually there when I was breaking through, and you got to get to know some of the lads. And as that was happening, you just got to know the importance of it and how serious of a thing it actually was. And I think to get to play at that level that they did, at the level that they was at, is, you know, it's phenomenal, really. But you never know. It's the beauty of the FA Cup, and that could happen with anyone. Look at Marine last year. They got to play against Tottenham and things. But, you know, it's almost like we get reminded of it every day. There's pictures up in the club. And if anything, it helps us to try and replicate what they've replicated, really. You know, it'd be great to try and get that another run like that on the go.
Is that the dream, to try and emulate that for Chase Town, the current team, get to the third round, maybe even get further? Saw it with Chorley this year. Marine, as you mentioned, they had Tottenham and they gave him such a fantastic game, particularly in that first half, hit the crossbar as well.
Yeah, that's it. It's just a, you know, in those sort of games, it's a tough one, really. It's, you know, you're going to be coming against some great players and obviously not expected to win by any stretch of imagination. But like you say, you never know what could have happened with that moment in Cardiff when we scored and you go up to 1-0 for quite a bit. People do start thinking, could this happen? And you never know if that shot against Marine would have gone in. Could that have been another upset? Or, you know, got people thinking, oh God, what could happen here?
Certainly against a team like Jose, managed by Jose Mourinho, that would have certainly been interesting. And on the Cardiff team, I think it was the likes of Joe Ledley and Aaron Ramsey. So that must have been a great afternoon for the guys at Chase Town to have come up against some great players.
Yeah, definitely. I think, obviously, only Aaron Ramsey was only, I'm not sure how old he was back then, but he was only playing at that level. So if you look at him compared to now, if you'd have thought that he was ever going to be at that level again, then it would have been an absolute nightmare. And it's like one of the lads at Chase Town who's in the squad now, Chris Slater. I remember him telling me a story before that Jamie Vardy actually scored a hat-trick against him. And I'm just sitting there thinking, bloody hell, you sat there with a squad member who's Jamie Vardy's banged an hat-trick against. It's not every time you get that, really, is it?
No, certainly not. I think the Chris Slater, I think he had a spell at Port Vale and Cal Perry after the first cup run. So that must be, again, something that you'd hope, if it could happen, that could then happen for yourself and a couple of your teammates, is get picked up by a Football League club.
Yeah, ideally the main thing is, you know, you want to play up high, as high in the pyramid as you possibly can, or as possibly as you think you can. And the best way to get spotted is playing against those teams like that and getting yourself in the shop window. So if anything like that can be replicated and anything, then that'd be great. But obviously you just got to play to the best of your ability and just see what happens come those games and take each game as it comes.
You mentioned about the game breaking into the first team. What was that like to make that step up from the diploma and the youth team into that first team and going into the rough and tumble of the Northern Premier League?
Yeah, it was a weird one. And in fairness, since I was about 16, 17, I always used to play Sunday League football anyway with men, and I fancy myself as an outfield player, if I don't mind me saying, on a Sunday. So, you know, especially on Sunday, you are kind of aware of the physicality side of it. So you kind of knew what you're getting yourself up for. But in terms of the actual quality of football, that's completely different kettle of fish. you know, it's a lot sharper, quicker, better paced and stuff. And it was a big step up, and it took a while for me to get used to. But once you get your head around things and things like that, you do quickly settle in and get to know everything and whatnot.
And that first season, if I'm right in thinking 16, 17 season, you got to the Staffordshire FA Senior Cup Final, which I think was a big deal for Chasetown, because I don't think they'd been in the final before. They hadn't certainly won the competition before. And so what was that like? Because you came up against a very good Stoke City reserve side and ended up going to penalties.
Yeah, that was amazing. I remember the game. If I'm honest, from what I remember correctly, we got hounded for 90 minutes, but we got one lucky break and we took the chance. And I remember they hit the bar, they come close a few times. And, you know, we were playing against the likes of a couple of first team players are in there now. There's Harry Souter, I believe, the right back, I can't quite remember his name. He's now at the first team. And, you know, they're just peppering us on the minute. It was Harry Souter actually got the equaliser in the last minute from a corner. So we knew going into penalties, it's, you know, obviously it can go anyone's way with penalties. I remember saving, I think it was one, but even just to be there, it was great just to play on Port Vale's pitch and just to get that level of football and see what level you've kind of got to be at to compete at that level as well.
Did you take the lead in the first minute in that game? Because I actually covered the game for a website called Non-League Pitch Hero, and I remember, I'm sure it was within the first few minutes that you opened the scoring.
Could have been, actually.
I'm upset.
I'm sure it was just from a complete against the run of play type thing. And I remember, I think it was Matty Gardner, he ran clean through and slotted the ball, and that's all you can hope for against a team like that, is get an early finish. But one of the main worries is scoring an early goal against a really good team. You're kind of like, is it a bit too early? You know, you're just going to get battered for the next 90 minutes, but we held on and until the 90th minute, obviously. But it was good. It was good to be there.
Touch on about being scoring too early. Is that always a case in football? Because I know a few managers have said that in post-match interviews. Oh, we scored too early. Is that something that really affects, you know, players' mentality and what have you, that you'd rather have scored, say, midway through the first half or what have you?
I think it's one of them. You know, you're always going to welcome a goal. You're not going to want to score, but it is a tough one. You know, I think sometimes you can, because you do have that set in your mindset, like, we can't concede. Now, your mindset completely changes when you know you can't let in a goal. When it's at 0-0, that's probably not the first thing on your mind. But as that sets in, it probably does relax some of the players' mentality in, oh, I'm not going to quite go for that ball when they usually should, or vice versa and stuff. So I think in big games, it can make a huge difference. But as long as you keep playing the way that you know you've always learned, then we should be able to manage games quickly and see out those type of games, really.
I think at the end of that season, you had quite a bit of a changeover. Dave Stringer, the manager, left to go to, I think it was Rugby Town, and a lot of players went, and Scott Dundas came in as his successor. So what was that like, first of all, having all the changes of virtually getting a new squad together?
Well, we went through a stage. When I first started breaking through the first thing, we went through a stage of going through a couple of managers. We had Chopper, who came in, Craig Harris, and then that changed to Marcus Law. And once he came in, things changed completely with him. And, you know, he changed the scene and spiced things up a bit. And we knew that we was in for a decent season. But then I think because he came into the end of the season, he found a better job. And I think he went to Kettering from there. And that's when Stringer came in. And I think we had about four managers in about two seasons there, just due to them moving on. But obviously, I didn't know Dund when he first came in. I didn't know much about him because I wasn't about that much at the level, but I just about secured my number one spot when Dunn come in. If I hadn't, he might have brought in someone he knew or put in his trust in someone else or seen something different. But I was glad I was able to, you know, get on a good personal level with Dunn at the end of the day and get that number one spot and keep it.
How important is it for someone like yourself? You just broke into the first team and got the number one spot, and then a new manager comes in. He might have his own goalkeeper that he rates and trusts or what have you. to bring him, but he's decided to keep faith with you, and it's really, it's ultimately paid off.
It is what you know, as a goalkeeper, at the end of it, you just want to play. And when you are sat as a number two on the bench, you do just want to play at the end of the day. So you could understand why people move from clubs to clubs when they're a keeper, and as long as they've got that shirt, then they're happy to stay there. But you know, I was glad Dunne had the faith in me to not bring anyone else. I don't think he probably didn't know too much about me before he come in or anything like that. But you know, he kept the faith, and I think we had a good first season that season. Actually, got playoffs.
Certainly did. We'll touch on the playoffs in a moment. But you mentioned another manager's name, a really big name in non-league football, in Marcus Law. I think he's managed took Tamworth up into the conference and what have you. He went to Kettering, as you say. He's had quite a few other big clubs. So what was that like working under Marcus Law?
It was great, to be honest. The moment from the get-go, he changed things. He, you know, we'd come into training and you'd have on the whiteboard specifics of what you'd do. And I believe he brought in a really good physio that, you know, did some really good stuff with us and set up presentations about what he wanted to do. And it was kind of like thinking, we're only semi-pro footballers here. This feels like the proper bee's knees type stuff. And, you know, that's the kind of mentality he wanted to set in us. And I believe that would have helped us start off with a good season with him. But because he left, obviously we weren't able to see what happened there.
Is that important that, let's say, although you are a semi-professional club and playing in a semi-professional league, that you get sort of like a full-time professional mentality into the team?
Yeah, definitely. I think at this level, you have got to find that fine balance between seriousness, and you have got to enjoy it at the end of the day. You know, you're doing something you love, so you're not going to do it if you're not. So you have got to make sure that you've got the fine balance between, right, when that whistle goes, you're working for 90 minutes, and you know, when you're at training, you might have the odd fun session just to let your hair down and whatnot. But that's the main thing, really.
And you touched on the playoffs in that first season under Scott Dundas. What was that season like? Because you ended up finishing fifth in the league table, going out in the semi-finals to Bedworth United.
It was amazing, really. You know, when Dunne took over, we wasn't quite, and I know he brought in quite a lot of players from around Stoke, and I wasn't aware of many players from over there just due to not being in the game long. So I wasn't sure how the season was going to pan out, but I think we actually had a very poor start to the season from what I remember. And it wasn't until our team night out that something must have clicked. Don't know what it was, but I think from then on, I don't think we really lost a game. And we kept winning and winning and winning. And the mentality set in to every single game going, we know we're not losing this game. And the changing room after when we were winning games was just electric. And I think that's massively key. You know, when that whistle goes, you want to go in that changing room and go absolutely mental and, you know, sing songs and do whatever lads do in a changing room and everything. So I think that's absolutely key and helps it massively.
Just looking at your results that season, you had some crazy results. You beat Belper at Term 5-1. I think you beat Peterborough Sports 5-4. And just noticed you put five past Batesford United on the last day of the season. It would won the league by 15 points. So that must have been a fantastic performance to end the season on.
Yeah, it was great. You know, it's always great to beat the league leaders. You're kind of hoping it's not, they didn't, you know, toss it off the last game or something like that. But I don't think they would have. You know, I don't think any clubs are like that at all. So we went in that game as if it was any other and just played what we did, and we just managed to turn them over and, you know, get a great result.
Just moving on to the following season, the 2018-19 season. And that was the season where the Northern Premier League said goodbye to the South, and it was the West Division. So what was that like? Because the travelling changed quite a lot for the Staffordshire teams and what have you.
Yeah, it was completely different. We're used to playing teams like Spalding and Claythorpes, and then we suddenly get told we're going over to Liverpool pretty much every weekend. And you know, it was great when you wanted to go on team nights out, don't get me wrong. Just end up in Liverpool and stuff. But there wasn't half some travelling that season. And with half the lads already being up in Stoke anyway, it weren't too bad for them. But half the journeys were coach journeys, and you know, we always welcome the coach journey. I think the best part of it is on the way back, and you know, just get all the beers out and just try and get as leery as you can. But the travelling was kind of an issue with work. It wasn't too much of an issue for me because I used to work in Stoke, so I just travel up after the games. But some of the lads were coming from Rugeley, where I live now, and that's like a good hour and a half travel just for a night game, and it's a lot to ask at the end of the day.
Certainly is, and I think you're the first person who actually I've spoken about the changes, who not against it, but you know, brought up reasons why it didn't work. Because as I said before, I was work on Kidsgrove and Leek Town for Mullins Radio and what have you. And I personally quite enjoyed it because I'm originally a Lancashire lad, so I was going back to all places I could pop home. And do you think would you have continued that? Because obviously we've then 12 months later, it then changes again, and you've got 2-3 hour long journeys over to the likes of Cleethorpe, Spalding, Lincoln, Wisbech and what have you.
I didn't personally mind. I actually like far away games because, you know, it gets the lads together on the coach all day and it's a good day out. And like I say, when you win the game, the 3 hour coach journey back is just made 10 times better. So that's kind of what I set my mentality for, just to win that game and have a good time and things like that. Obviously, win the game first and foremost, and then the coach journey comes afterwards. I wasn't set on the coach journey, but it was a massive part of it. But I could see from some of the lads, it's a lot of commitment for them, especially a lot of the younger ones. It's a long way to travel if you're not getting on the bench and just not even getting on the pitch. I could imagine it would be quite frustrating for some people.
I can imagine so. And the leagues are set to be changing again, and I think it's going to be a mixture between the Liverpool teams and the Birmingham team. So I guess it's a bit of a best of both worlds, really, because you have got some long journeys up to the likes of Bootle and City of Liverpool if the restructuring does take place, which it looks pretty much like the FA have confirmed it. But then you've got to go to the likes of Sporting Kouse, Sutton Coldfield, who are not too far from Chase Town.
I've seen the proposed documents that ended up on Google, and I don't know if they're potentially official ones or if ones that just someone made and what could be the potential ones. But if you're looking at that type of league, then it is going to be a tough league. There are a lot of trips up to Liverpool, and you have got your local ones as well, which you can't obviously beat just for your Midlands derbies. But I don't personally mind the travel, as long as it's not, you know, 4 or 5 hours on a Tuesday night, then I don't really mind.
That's the worst of it, having to travel on a Tuesday night 4 hours, and they've done that
strictly
away on a Tuesday night, and that's just horrendous. I think the Google document you're on about, I've seen it, and the guy who does it, he posts every year, and I think if he's not near enough spot on, he is as close to spot on as possible. He always seems to be calling it and calling it right, which hopefully if that's the case, that will be decent then, because you say it's not the worst travelling in the world. And just going back onto Chase Town, you're closing in on 200 appearances for Chase Town, so that must be pleasing that you're hitting such a high number for one club.
Yeah, in fact, I'm very close. I believe I'm one appearance off hitting that 200 mark. And due to COVID, I'd have hit that ages ago and possibly been on the 250. And, you know, I got a red card earlier in the season. If I wouldn't have had that, I'd have been over it by now and stuff. So there's plenty of things to come to it. And to be on 199 before this season, curtailed again, it's really annoying. But it's a good almost starting block to start back on is your first game back from so ever long as your 200th appearance. So, it's something I'm proud of to have so many appearances for one club, and something I just want to build on and just to see what happens and what goes where.
Yeah, as you say, it must be pleasing and what have you, and particularly as you say with all this COVID, and you said if we hadn't had the coronavirus, you'd be 250 easily, looking towards the 300 mark. So that must have been doubly disappointing. I know you talked about it all being curtailed, and
yeah, it is rather annoying. It's, you know, I want to try and get as many appearances as I can just for one club, just so you've got that to look back on. But at the end of the day, we've just got to take it as it comes. It's not every so often, I don't think, COVID's going to come around. So I think that'll be the last time it'll do before I get to an old age. So as long as another season don't cancel, then I'm sure it'll be all good.
Yeah, hopefully. And as you say, a great starting block to start on hitting the 200 and then moving on from that.
Definitely. I would like to, well, hopefully with a proper season, it should be about the 250 mark, and then we can build on there. I'm not sure what most appearances is for a keeper at Chasetown, but that's going to be my aim.
That's a good aim to go for. I think I'm just trying to find the record appearance of all time, and I think off the top of my head it's Chris Slater with about 500, but don't quote me on that. So is that going to be the next aim after you've got the 200, is to try and go after his number and really hit the big numbers?
Well, that's a big ask at the end of the day. He's at some phenomenal stats there that's got to take years to replicate, and he's probably upped it even more now. He's just like, he retired for a bit and now he's come back playing. He's obviously going to keep adding to those stats, and you know, fair play to him. You know, as a keeper, you can last a little bit longer, so they say. So we'll just see what happens in the years to come and just, go from there.
And touch wood, we will have another pandemic, which leaves you a bit short off beating his record if you ever get close to that. Talk about being close to that and what have you. Have you always wanted to stay at Chasetown, or have you ever been tempted to move to a different club or higher up the league? Because where you're based down in Mid Staffordshire, you've got some fantastic teams like some Stafford Rangers round the corner, and then you've got your Wolverhampton based clubs, the likes of Sporting Council, who we've mentioned before. Telford United are not too far away from you. So is that something you've been tempted about, or have you always wanted to stay?
It's a weird one. I remember when I was about 18, I went out on loan just to get game time and everything. And I went to Walsall Wood for a couple of games with Swanee, who's the current gaffer now. And I was happy to stay there. I was getting regular game time. I was playing well. So I wanted to stay with him. But unfortunately, the Chasetown keeper got injured and I got recalled. And that was when I actually scored my number one spot. But moving on from there, I've not really looked anywhere else other than Chasetown. I believe after when Strings was involved, Stafford Rangers and Hentford both wanted to sign me, but they both had their favourite keepers. And I think Ad Whitehouse, you know, he's a favourite keeper back in the day at Stafford Rangers. And I believe they had Dan Crane, who was a favourite at Hentford. So I knew full well that that's some pretty big boots to step into. And what was playing on my mind is I'm just going to go and be the number two there. So I'd rather play at the level that I'm playing at and just get games. Just build on my knowledge and everything like that, and just play as much as I possibly can. Other than that, I don't believe I've really been bothered about going anywhere else. I'm happy. I know every square inch of the club, so it's good just to be down there every season.
Some big names you mentioned to learn alongside, particularly Dan Crane. He's coming up in a future podcast episode, and I was just doing a bit of starting researching on him, and he's got such a vast experience career, so it'd have been some interesting to learn from.
Yeah, like you never know where it may have gone. I could have gone there, been the number two, and learnt from him and just progressed from there. But me personally, I would rather just be playing than take that number two spot. And that's just my mindset. If I got asked to go and be the number one back then I may have gone. But I knew full well that I was never going to take that shirt easily. So I'm always one to obviously fight for the shirt, but I would rather just play than just sit there on the bench.
You mentioned about Mark Swan coming in as manager, and your current manager at Chasetown taking over from Scott Dundas last February. So what was that like, having to switch between managers midway through a season?
It was a weird one. You know, I'd knew Dund for a couple of years, and because that had been my full-on playing years, we built a good relationship, and we had a good relationship with the players and everything. So to see him go was a tough one, but because I already knew Swanee, I knew what he was about, you know, and things like that. So I knew full well what I was getting myself in for. And the lads that are from Stoke that were with Dunn's wasn't quite aware of how Swanee was and who he is. And, you know, I tried to, you know, assure them of what he was like and when I've been with him. So I knew something good was going to come of it. and you know, on the back end of what happens. So it was a hard one to take, but that's football at the end of the day. Things like that happen in a flash, so it is what it is.
We've touched briefly on the start of this season, the very, very short season. When the season finished the start of November, you were sitting in fifth place, the last playoff place in the table. So you'd started really well, and you had a decent cup run, winning a couple of games against Kidsgrove, Scott Dundas's new club. And I think did you beat Telford United, or did you take them to penalties?
I was actually spectating that game due to my previous red card, but it went to penalties. But yeah, I remember the first game of the season against Dunn's team. You couldn't just write it, could you? You know, the team that he goes to, we end up playing them in the FA Cup. So we knew it was a big game for both of us, players and staff at the end of the day. So we didn't try to let that play on our minds too much. We just tried to play it as, right, we're playing Kidsgrove. It's a normal FA Cup game. Take as it comes. And from what I remember, it's quite a scrappy game because we'd been off for a while and there wasn't any clean-cut chances. And I believe we got the penalty, didn't we? You know, when Lange converted it from the rebound. And we knew we were in for a tough game from there. It's always tough when we go to Kidsgrove. And we had that man sent off. Mm. And when that happens, you know, you're going to be in it. But we managed to stick out and get the win. And, you know, you take the win gracefully. You're not going to sit there and boast because you do respect London, the players that you used to play with at the end of the day. So we moved on from that and, you know, just went with the season. But like I said, we did have a good cup run, that FA Cup game. I think Baseford was my last game before my sending off. I think it was about the 50th minute. And the subkeeper that come on, he did a great job of holding Baseford a full time at the end of the day. And for us to beat them 2-1 was amazing with 10 men. I remember just being in the showers, you know, really, really angry at myself, at what had gone on. And I just heard cheers and I knew that it was coming from our end. So that kind of boosted me up massively. And I forgive myself, shall I say.
Mentioned about Baseford being full-time, and we've seen it recently with South Shields in the Premier Division going full-time. Do you think that's the way the Northern Premier League may potentially be going in the next few years, is teams going full-time and what have you, or moving to this hybrid model that teams are using in the National League North and South?
Yeah, I mean, if they've got the money to do it, then fair play to them. They've got to do what they've got to do to try and get the results. And if that means getting the players to train every day, if they can afford to do all that, then fair play to them. Obviously, it gives them a massive advantage training every day. I mean, what we train Tuesdays, Thursdays and play on the Saturdays. So just for a couple of hours, let alone a couple of days. But you just go into the game just trying to remind yourself that just take each game as it comes and just try and play against it. And when we knew we was playing against the team that was full-time, we knew we was going to be up against it. But like I say, we managed to hold on and get the win.
Certainly. And we've talked for about 40 minutes or so now. We've mentioned five or six different managers, but one man who's been crucial to the backroom staff at Chase Town is the goalkeeper coach, John Burtz. What's it like working with him? Because I believe he's a bit of a Chase Town legend.
Yeah, he is. You know, Bertie. I knew Bertie from when I was 15, even before the scholarship. I used to go down to Chase Town on a Friday night and, you know, do some goalkeeper sessions then. So I knew him since then. And then obviously through the scholarship, I knew he was working with the first team. But I've been with Bertie ever since I've been, a keeper at the end of the day. So working with someone that you've got to know over the years for that long, you do form a good relationship and a good bond. And he knows how I work. And I know how he works at the end of the day. And it is amazing. You know, he steps in training and does what he can. Pulls off some good saves. I'll give him that one. And we have a good laugh at the end of the day. It's all what it's about, it keeper training.
Is it important that you've developed that relationship with him and he's been like a consistent figure throughout the managerial changes?
Yeah, definitely. It's a good one. You know, when people always tell me from the bench, you know, whenever something happens in a game, if I, you know, make a slight mistake or or something like that. Apparently, Bertie's the first one to jump on me back and support me on it, saying no, he didn't mean to do that and stuff like that. So it's great to have at the end of the day when you've got that support behind you, because no one truly knows the keeper's position unless you've been in that position. You know, you get these strikers all the time that think it's an easy game, but we'd like to see them put on a pair of gloves and see how they take it.
I think that's one of the reasons why I started this podcast, was to really find out what it takes to be a goalkeeper, because everyone can be a striker, but it certainly takes something special to be a goalkeeper, and not just a goalkeeper, a very good goalkeeper, which yourself are, and playing over 200 games, playing nearly 200 games for Chesham, certainly proves that.
Yeah, they do say you've got to be mad to be a keeper, and I'm sure if you spoke to a couple of lads at the Kids Grove game, they'd tell you a few stories about some of the stuff they've seen from myself and whatnot. But it is a tough position. At the end of the day, you're standing there in goal for 90 minutes and you could not have a thing to do all game, with some of the fans giving you a lot of abuse from time to time. But I think that I love that from the fans. You know, I try and give them as much banter back as I can, and that's the beauty in non-league. You hear every word that gets said to you, so as long as you can give it back and take it, that's the main thing. But being a keeper is, I'd say it's more of a tough one mentality, because if a keeper makes a mistake, it's a goal. But the striker misplaces a shot, he's going to have another one 2 minutes later, so it can all be forgotten about.
Touched on the banter you get with the away fans, and you've had played against a variety of clubs, from the Liverpoolian teams, the Lincolnshire teams, the Manchester teams. Who's the best supporters to give the banter, and who you've enjoyed coming up against?
There has been a few. I believe when we played Leamington in the FA Cup, they had a nice set of banter. I mean, they were calling me fat and everything throughout the game. I mean, it's not obviously not nice, but you know, for what, they don't really mean it. But just when they're constantly heckling you, and you know, you do get some bad ones which genuinely do want to hurt your feelings, like, but it doesn't bother me. You just take it on the chin. And another set of good fans. I think Leek, I've had my fair set of abuse from Leek fans over the years, but I think they've come to know me over the years, so they know that I can also give it back a bit as well. So that they like that. I've had a few people say to me after the Leek games, like, fair play to you for giving it back. So that's the main thing, really. As long as they know it's all on a banter level, then that's, you just got to sit there and enjoy it.
Is that important, that you can give it back a bit within the right reasons and moderation?
Yeah, it's part of goalkeeping. You know, you make a mistake, you're going to look a fool, but you just got to not let that get to you. You know, if I ever make a mistake in the game, I'll try and have a laugh with it about the fans afterwards, just to not look a complete idiot. But it is one of them. Sometimes you do just see a lot of fans, and it can be a little bit intimidating, but you just got to try and use that with your performance and try and help spur you on, really. That's why I try and get on a banter level with them, and just to have the crack. At the end of the day, it's non-league football, isn't it? So that's what it's about.
And we're coming to the end of the podcast, so we always like to end with a few questions. So the first one is always, what do you see the future being for yourself then, Curtis?
Probably see out my career at Chesham. I just want to just play as much as I can and play as many games as I can. And if things come to an end due to whatever reason at Chesham, that's the way the world's got to be. You know, if I suddenly drop down, then so be it. If I go up, then that's the way of the world. But I would quite happily just keep going and see how that goes there.
Yeah. Who's the best player you've played with? We normally ask it as both the best player you've played with or against, but we're mixing it up now. So we're going to start with, who's the best player you've played with throughout your career?
There's been a few. There's a few tough ones, really. I mean, Slates is just a rock at the back. You know, since I ever first come in, he was amazing. I remember when he would just constantly support you. It's the same as Simon Brown. He was a main one when I was coming through and first started playing my proper games. And he used to give a lot of the players grief on our team if someone misplaced a pass. But when I was that age, if I did it, he would always have me back. And that's amazing to have at that kind of level. And he was always an amazing player. He would skip past players and put in some balls that you never believed. And he was just an amazing player to play with.
And who's the best player you've played against? Because there's some good players in the Northern Premier League.
Yeah, I mean, we played against a few. I mean, we played West Brom in a pre-season friendly, and Boaz Mile ended up actually playing there. So in terms of where they'd been or where they'd been at, it would probably be him. But he actually made a mistake that game that led to our goal. He miskicked the ball and it went in, but I don't want to go on that too much. But it's hard to say. It's, you know, we played against a few good players in our team in my time. We've Shaw Lane, they was always up and ready for a good team. And I think it's Gavin Allett. He's probably one of the best strikers I've ever played against. And, you know, he's a big lad. So, you know, he's going to be a tough game coming in for these challenges and everything.
Which goalkeeper did you model yourself on or aspire to be like when you were growing up?
I always liked Ben Foster as I was growing up. I just liked his style and how he was and how I just think the way he dived, it just looked so different from other people. It just like I can't really explain it, but I just like wanted to aspire to have his technique in diving and things like that. So I would kind of suggest him. And then as I kind of got older, you learn about how Schmeichel used to save a ball, so you kind of replicate these type of saves and everything. So there has been a few, but I think Ben Foster was always for me as I was kind of getting into the keeper game.
And why did you want to be a goalkeeper when you were growing up? Why not say a striker? I know you said you play outfield in Sunday League football.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I think I first started going in goal when I think I was at a training session trying to be an outfield player, and I kind of caught a ball from behind the goal and I got tested in goal and managed to keep the ball out a couple of times. But I love the feeling you get when you make a brilliant save. I think it's slightly different to that than what you would a goal. Obviously, scoring many in my Sunday League career, shall I say. It's a different feeling when you make a great save and have a good game as a keeper. And it's a completely different feeling when you make a mistake as a keeper as well compared to when you make a mistake as a player. So I think the highs as a goalkeeper are a lot more rewarding than they are as a player, potentially. So yeah, I think that would be probably one of the main reasons.
What's been the best moment in your career so far, then?
I think one of the most memorable moments, I'd say the best is obviously when we got to the playoffs, but the most memorable that always stands out to me is when we played Lincoln. No, was it Lincoln? It was Loughborough. We played Loughborough away. We played shocking all game. I believe they were winning 1-0. We managed to get the draw back to 1-1. And literally for 45 minutes, we were battering them, but we just couldn't get the ball in the net. And I believe I was having the ball on the halfway line and, you know, picking out passes from there. And that goes to show when you're battering a team. And I actually had a shot that game myself that completely went wrong. And I remember everyone completely having a complete go at me. It was like the last minute of the game. I completely shanked the ball over the top from about 40 yards out. And resultingly, from that goal kick, the keeper shanked the ball that led to our break and we actually got the winner. So that was one of the most amazing feelings, just get that winner from that kind of scenario was next level.
Did you claim an assist for that goal then?
Yeah, if I wouldn't have had the shot at the end of the day, then we wouldn't have got the goal. So I'd like to put that one down to myself. I mean, they didn't put it as my assist tally, but I think it should go down as it.
Yeah, I fully agree. It should be on that. Your assist tally, yeah. We'll have to speak to the statisticians there to change time to get that added on there. Just finally, what advice would you give to a young goalkeeper who's listening to this podcast and is thinking of donning the gloves?
The advice I give is play as much as you can, play, train as much as you can. Because like I said earlier in the podcast, you don't play for as many years as what you can play. So the more you can play, the more you can better yourself. And you're going to regret it when you finally do hang up them boots. And you never know where you're going to get yourself. So keep them gloves on and just keep trying and just keep getting yourself there and just play as many games as you can.
Curtis, we've recorded a great podcast and thank you for your time. Yeah.
No worries, it's been great being in, great chatting you, mate.
Thank you, and hopefully we'll see you next season hitting that 200 appearance mark for Chase Town.
Hopefully, we'll see how it goes.
Remember, you can follow this podcast on Twitter and Instagram at Non-League Keeper. That's NONLGE Keeper.
You can also subscribe to the podcast by clicking the subscribe button on your chosen device and chosen listening platform. You'll get every episode delivered straight to your device at 7 a.m. every Friday when the episode drops. But for now, thank you for listening.